Okay, so I want to turn the floor over to Rita Atkins, who is just a great person. Her spirit is always up. You know, I've never been to one of these conferences, never come to Missouri without thinking about that. And, you know, she's there on the forefront. She's going to show you the data. She's been the project data coordinator or evaluation coordinator. And so this is what she's sort of calling the long and winding road, which is a very good metaphor because when you have chronic diseases too, you're on a long and winding road. So I want to turn the mic over to you.
Okay. So can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I called this the long and winding road, but it really has been the fastest 5 years ever. And also I thought, those of you like me who have changes going through your head, maybe now you can have the long and winding road going through your head. So when I started looking at all the data, it was, you know, I was making all these tables and all these charts, and it was really, really confusing to me even at a point. So I just wanted to let you know I'm going to be talking about three different sets of data. Well, it's all the same set of data, but first of all, I'm going to be going over all of the patients that we screened across, and then a little subset, the people who actually qualified for an intervention, and then I'm going to talk about the outcomes of the people that we actually followed up on. So I got to use my Venn diagram, which I love so much. So, first of all, we actually, for every 100 patients that were screened, about 30 qualified, had a positive pre-screen. And of those, there were about 5 people who qualified for a brief education, 1 for a brief coaching, and 2 for referral to treatment. When we first started, we thought we would have a much higher intervention level than that because the other cohorts had 15 to 20%. I was reading the reports from Colorado. They had a 16% intervention rate. So we kind of wondered about that. But we used a different screening tool, the ASSIST, which I think is more robust. And actually, when I looked at the National Survey on Drug Use and Health Results from 2010. Wen talked about that yesterday. When you ask how many days have you used in the past 30, overall for the nation, about 52% said they had, and almost 9% had used drugs. Colorado had a much higher rate than that. They're like the top 5 drug-using state, and Missouri's a little below the national average, so we think that it's a combination of maybe we actually do have lower usage rates and the screening tool was different. Okay, so now we're actually going to talk about the patient characteristics and the 6-month outcomes. Looking at the little Venn diagram, we are going to be concentrating now on just all the patients that were screened. As of September 30th, and I'm going to talk about what has actually been uploaded to the government. So as of June 30th, there were 96,495 patients screened across the state of Missouri. 8% qualified for an intervention. And we are required to follow up on 10% of the people who actually have an intervention. And that is how we choose those people, if they had an intervention, and if their Social Security number ended in 50 to 59. We had 501 people who qualified for the follow-up, but only 269 consented to be followed. So we had a little over half of the people who actually qualified consented to be followed. Here's just a map of where we are across the state. We started in Springfield, expanded to Columbia, and then St. Louis, and now in all of the primary care health homes. So we're represented statewide, pretty much across the state. This is actually the screening by site. As Matthew said earlier, the FQHCs had have quite a bit more than that, but this is what has been uploaded as of the end of June for the FQHCs. So we have well over 100,000 people screened at this point. When you look at the gender distribution, 60% of that almost 100,000 people were female, which I think is pretty much across the state, women present for health care more than men. The racial composition is very similar to the racial composition of the state. We had 20% black or African American and almost 70% white. When you look, the average age of our patients was 36. When you look at the age group, almost 23% were in that 18 to 24 age group. When you look at it by male and female, it's a little, we had almost 25% of females, of the people in the 18 to 24 age range, the females were in that. So we had a little lower rate of males in that age group. But then that turned around for the 45 to 54 age range, there were a higher percentage of males in that group. I guess they finally decided they did need help, medical help. So just a little summary of the overall group. More likely to be female. The racial composition is very much like the racial composition of the state. Average age 36, and there's higher percentage of females in the 18 to 24% age range, and males have a higher percentage in the 45 to 54. So now we are going to look at the patients that qualify for an intervention. If you remember, overall, it's 8% of the people qualified for an intervention. So we actually had, by race, is pretty much, there are few exceptions. Asian and Island Pacificers have lower rates. And American Indian and multiracial people who self-identified as being multiracial had higher rates of qualifying for an intervention. And I looked at the substance that they used in the past 30 days. Like Matthew said, for people who qualify for an intervention, we ask how many times in the past 30 days have you used all of those substances by for people, all the people qualified for brief education, brief coaching, referral, the treatment, and alcohol was the number one substance used. Males reported using that more than females, and they also reported binge drinking more than the females. Everything else is pretty much the same by gender, the usage rates, except for women reported a little more cocaine and heroin use than the males. Oh, and methamphetamine also. So we had 7,500 people that qualified for an intervention. They were more likely to be male, which was it flipped. There's 60% females were screened, but that flipped to the 40% female qualified for an intervention and 60% of the males. The racial composition is pretty much the same, except, like I said, for the there were more overrepresentation of American Indians and people that are multiracial. Average age 36, just like the overall group, and almost 80% their drug of choice was alcohol, followed by marijuana, 54%. So now we're going to talk about that little subgroup of the people who qualified for an intervention, the people that we actually followed up with. The gender distribution, 46% female, 54% male. So women were a little more likely to agree to be followed. And I looked at the people who qualified to be for the follow-up, and it was pretty much evenly distributed based on, you know, 5% qualified for a brief education. So it was pretty much what exactly 10% should have been. But when I looked at the people who actually consented, less than half of the people who qualified for an intervention agreed to be followed. So the people who had a brief coaching or referral to treatment were more likely to agree to be followed. So this is the infamous little, how many days in the past 30 have you used? Like I said, after 6 months, we call the people who have agreed to be followed up and ask, how many days have you used in the past? And we had some really dramatic reductions. Everything is statistically significant. So alcohol use decreased by 55%, binge drinking by 33%, illegal drugs by 51%, and alcohol and drug by 47%. And marijuana is always our little problem area. There was a 37% reduction in use. For those people who qualify for brief coaching and referral to treatment, we also ask about national outcome measures, or NOMs as they're called for the GIPRA. So abstinence increased 530%. Those that were employed or in school increased by 26%. And those that experienced no health or behavior consequences because of their drinking, that increased by 56%, almost 57%. And people who had been arrested in the past 30 days, that decreased by 13%. So we had some really good outcomes for those domains also. So just a little summary of that. Our follow-up group were more likely to be male. The racial composition was pretty much overall. And we had a little bit higher average age of 36.8. And the drug of choice was alcohol, followed by marijuana. Almost 75% used marijuana, and 86% used alcohol. So we've had these really good results. So how do we keep this going after September 30th? The Affordable Care Act presents opportunities for that. I found this quote and I really liked it. It's from Tom McClelland. People in the substance abuse field may know that. He developed the Addiction Severity Index and is really big in the treatment field. He said the Affordable Care Act will bring the treatment of substance use disorders, not just addiction, but problematic use, into the same venue where we are now treating diabetes, hypertension, and asthma. I thought that was really good, especially coming from somebody who's been dedicated to treatment all these years, to recognizing that prevention is very important. Like I said, the Affordable Care Act, they will pay for prevention services that are deemed effective. And alcohol screening and brief counseling has been rated number 4 by the Partnership for Prevention as being one of the 4th most effective prevention services. And that is above colon screenings, which I found very surprising. So how do we continue once the grant is over? When we got this grant in 2008, the Department of Mental Health had produced a report that estimated that the cost to society in Missouri for substance abuse was $7 billion annually. So it really makes sense to address the risky use before it progresses to abuse. Because there have been numerous studies that indicate there's cost savings of between $3.81 to $5.60 for each dollar that's invested in screening. And so the most promising approach is to sustain SBI, is for MoHealthNet to fund the state Medicaid codes already on the state's fee schedule. In 2007, Centers for Medicaid Services designated some codes that were that could be used for screening for substance use. They are on the fee schedule, but there is not a dollar amount assigned to it. At MIMH, we prepared a report that examines all 50 states and the status of the Medicaid fee schedule for in each state. And we found that there's 22 states that have the Medicaid or CPT, the codes open for SBI reimbursement, and 29 states have the health and behavior assessment intervention codes, which some people use for screening brief intervention. Because of the all of the benefits of this, MoHealthNet and the governor's office have agreed to fund those codes, hopefully the beginning of next year. So are there any questions over what I just went?
I have a question about that last statement you made about MoHealthNet funding for the health and behavior codes. Do you know what profession that they are going to allow to use those codes?
We do not know. I'll let Barbara talk about that. Do you have the... I don't know what happened to the microphone.
We're working with MoHealthNet, and I know the Missouri Primary Care Association is working with them to come up with those definitions of who can do it and how it will be reimbursed.
And one of the things with the health and behavioral assessment codes that they're looking at, it's likely going to be linked to your NCQA patient-centered medical home recognition level as well, as being an identifying piece to be able to even bill for these. We're also working with St. Louis Behavioral Medicine Institute on developing a certification program for the billing of those codes. So that's in the works right now. We hope to have something this fall, beginning of next year, as we roll that out. So we're touching base to see where we're at with that and moving forward. But we've gotten much further than we have in the past. We've been working on the coverage of these codes since 2008 with the organizations that have been part of the integration initiative with the CMHC. So we're one step closer, and this is as close as we've gotten. So we're very excited that it looks like we're going to get some coverage of these codes. When we get coverage of these codes, it's likely going to impact the BHC percentage that's in the per member per month, because we're going to have a billing mechanism for it. So there are going to be a lot of things that will be coming out about that.
It's my understanding, too, that this is limited only to the FQHCs at this point.
We were looking at for the health homes, and we're not sure if it's just going to be health homes, or if they're going to open it up, one of the things by requiring an NCQA recognition, perhaps some certification type of pieces, they might open it up to other organizations as well. Those are some of the questions we don't know.
So MoHealthNet primarily FQHCs and CMHCs.
In the primary care, the other primary care health homes. So, because we're nearing the end of our 8 quarters of the state plan amendment, we're also working on making some changes to that state plan amendment. The enhanced federal reimbursement ends in December, but the state is still moving forward with the additional match rate with the Fed. So we're going to have an opportunity to change some of the things that did not work as well with the help home and continue the things that worked really well.
Thanks, Angela. We thought this would be a good time to have some people talk about some stories that they might have from talking with patients, because you can look at all those numbers and, you know, it's just numbers, but there are people behind those numbers. So we thought it would be good if people could share stories. And I'm going to turn it over to Wynn and let him. But I do have a story to share, and that is I have a good friend who was telling me he's having trouble sleeping, but he had a drink before he went to bed, but he stayed under the limits because he had attended Wynn's treatment, and that he was very, I mean, not his treatment, his presentation, and he was very aware of what is safe levels now, and he has made some real changes in his life, which I thought was really good. So I know we have lots of stories like that out there. So we'd like for you to share.